Travelling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zimke.
Morena Kirsten, how are you?
I'm good.
That is
freezing,
very good.
Foggy morning.
It is not warm today. It is certainly not. Hey, we're going to be warming ourselves up though with some very danceable tunes today. What are we talking about?
So this is called the Minneapolis Sound, and it's quite timely being as we're focusing on the black community of Minneapolis right now.
Yeah.
And so this is 1980s, and it's basically sort of initiated by Prince, who created this music that, previous to it was funk, but this was more electronic funk, right? It had like, electronic brass instead of real brass that, funk had had more of those big bands. And so Prince, started a bunch of other bands at the time, and then some of these other bands splintered off, and we'll talk more about it. And it was this really unique sound of the 80s that kind of changed black music.
Mm.
It was during the era of MTV as well, so it was like super visual. You know, we're talking huge shoulder pads, high hair, lace fingerless gloves, pearls, shiny clothes, bright colors. And it really, I think up until that time, a lot of people hadn't realized, that Minneapolis had a black community and was capable of producing music.
Mm-hmm.
Except, this is ironic, one of the earlier hits Minneapolis had produced was Funky Town.
Really? I didn't know that that's where that had come from. I'm gonna hit this first track.
And then it turns out it was a funky town.
It's a very funky town.
It was a funky town.
I mean, this is extremely funky.
I think you'd be hard-pressed not to move around to this.
How'd you know I was moving around? You can hear the electronicness of it.
Yeah. You can hear the kind of Prince influence already. It's got that sound that you just absolutely associate with him.
So because it's called Minneapolis Sound, were all the artists in this genre from Minneapolis, or did it end up spreading further abroad?
It spread a little bit, and we'll play one spread song. But
okay.
They definitely... Everyone knows the other ones were copying this.
Mm.
And Prince, especially his sound.
Yeah.
So you can hear Prince on the backing vocals here.
Oh, true.
Yes.
Distinctive voice. We're listening to Sheila E.
Yeah. And
now,
so
who's Sheila?
So she is a percussionist, which is really interesting for a percussionist.
Yeah.
To become, like the solo star. And her performances are amazing. She stands up at the front with a pair of timbales and just like...
Oh my God.
Wails on them.
Cool.
She's called the Queen of Percussion. So she's actually not from Minneapolis, but Prince sort of picked her up after sort of spotting her performing in another band.
Nice.
And then she became a part of his Purple family.
The Purple Fano.
Yes. And she released a couple of albums, had a lot of hits. Belle of St. Mark, people might know some of the other ones. And she, then played with his band a lot after that.
So you were saying that not only was Prince the inspiration or like the first of the sound, but he kind of curated it a bit too.
Absolutely.
How much of the Minneapolis sound is like Prince and Prince adjacent bands, and how much is bands that like listened to Prince and got inspiration from him?
90% is Prince adjacent.
Okay.
Or Purple Fano.
Purple Fano.
Like, he produced this band called The Time, Morris Day and The Time.
Okay.
And Apollonia 6 and Vanity. Mm-hmm. They're all girlfriends. Sheila E. was a girlfriend. Apollonia was a girlfriend. Vanity was a girlfriend.
His own brand.
Wendy and Lisa were those two ladies that performed in his band. Oh, wait. Here's a weird fact about Sheila E. Is she's Nicole Richie's biological aunt.
Oh, what?
Ah.
You know how Nicole Richie's adopted by Lionel Richie?
Yeah.
It was another musician in his band who, for obviously whatever reason, gave her up for adoption.
And Sheila is her biological aunt. There you go. It's a small world.
And she actually, so weird, had medical problems and stopped performing for a little while. She's performing now. Because of playing drums and high heels for long periods of time.
Really?
Ow. Oh, so it was like a physical injury.
She's terrible. Yeah. Yeah, she was left semi-paralyzed.
Oh, my God.
Had lung issues.
I feel high heels can be a really cruel invention in some scenarios.
They are. They
I know.
Are.
I mean, she looks amazing. I mean, have a look. And she's just iconic Prince look, you know, sort of multiracial, you know, sort of part French African background, part Latino. And that was part of this Minneapolis sound as well, was the sort of multiracial. Prince really liked this sort of mixed group. And I guess, you know, he added a lot of rock to his music, you know, instead of how funk the guitars just did sort of backing scratches.
Yeah.
And so, and you know, he sort of really brought this black and white sound, black and white people. And I think it was part of this MTV era as well, because MTV at first was super resistant to play black music. It was a rock only.
Is that quite...
So Prince was able to sneak in.
There's that quite famous interview with David Bowie where... He doesn't really answer any of the questions. He asks the interviewer, why don't you guys play black music? Seen that doing the rounds again recently.
Yes. Yeah, and so totally, you know, he knew it and totally aware of it.
So who wrote these tracks? So did Sheila and her band write this, or did Prince write this, or how did these songs kind of come to be?
I think he wrote a lot of them
right.
and played a lot of them. And that was the thing with Prince too, is he would play all the instruments.
True.
But of course, live, you know, he couldn't. And so, you know, Sheila E. would have obviously played the percussion, and then live would have played percussion. Apparently, there's some great clips from a television show. She appeared on some Ringo Starr shows, and they do these great drum dialogues.
Oh, that's cool. I forgot Ringo Starr had a TV show.
I didn't know.
It's just one of those weird bits of music history where you're like, oh, that was a thing.
Yeah, it's appeared like in films and that sort of stuff, because it does sort of send you back to this time.
And also, in true funk style as well, these are not short songs. This particular track is 12 minutes long, so I'm going to rudely fade into our next song, which is by a group called...
Oh, well, that's cool you got the 12-minute version, though. But,
yeah, we found the 12-minute one. This one is a radio edit version, though, but it is Climax.
Okay, now this group is not from Minneapolis, but part of the sound and later were produced by some of the Purple Fauno.
Got you.
I had to leave my condo to come to this. Well, I'm back, but this time I'm with my man. And these women are putting their hands all over his Yamamoto Kanzai sweater, the iPod. And I'm much, much unhappy about that. I'd hate to come down to the level and become a BW, a basic woman. But if they don't stop, it's gonna get scandalous.
Scandalous. What are we listening to, Kirsten?
Now, so this is Meeting in the Ladies' Room. And now Climax, if you're gonna look it up, K-L-Y-M-A-X-X. That's what
I get for being in the This is a real, like, bout to throw hands kind of song.
Yeah, and it's a real girl song, and like, apparently, like, it's still appearing on TV shows, like it's RuPaul and
I was gonna
Pose.
Say, a lot of this kind of like Minneapolis sound has a sort of a relationship to the music you hear in ballroom scenes as well. Like, sonically, it sounds like that. Is there like a direct link, or was it just like it worked?
Except that it was so sexual, and Prince too was just so. Gender bending with his looks, so you know that was always sort of seen as, you know, the sort of ally and understanding of the queer community. And another fun fact about this song is the video was produced by Gerald Casal of Devo.
Oh, true.
So that's a weird.
That is a weird connection. Crossover. I like that. So who were Climax? So they were not from Minneapolis. How did they come to be as a group?
No. They were just like a female pop band with five members, and you know, the members were all like really talented musicians and produced for a lot of other bands too, which is you know, because oftentimes we don't think of women doing that.
Yeah, especially not in this era, maybe.
Yeah, but yeah, so they were legit musicians, but you know, they later did get some songs produced with the sort of Purple family, so there is some connection.
Yeah, so this kind of started as being like fans of that Prince vibe, and then it kind of got brought into the fold eventually. Thoughts on this, BFM listeners? 5395. I'm sure some of you have got Prince stories out there. If you went to see Prince's last gig, I'm so jealous of you.
Me too. No, I've never seen him live.
No, I would love to have caught him, eh?
But see, even that kind of whispery singing is kind of Princey as well.
Yeah. This kind of production is sort of having a bit of a revival at the moment. There's like a real, like 80s production sound coming through, and like a lot of mainstream pop music, a lot of club music as well. It's quite interesting to hear that cycle happening again.
It's great sound. It's like clean, but packed at the same time.
Yeah.
Well, and this music really took, you know, sort of that R&B soul to a different place, you know. So you'd had in the
funked
70s disco and funk.
Yeah.
But this really brought it sort of more pop, more electric.
It feels like late night kind of club music, like you're going out with your friends. This is the kind of music you would, it's sort of like this, almost like the start of the night music is kind of what it reminds me of. And you're like, yeah, we're about to go out.
Those hand claps, though.
So good. So 80s.
Don't slap me.
Don't slap me.
But so, you know, George Floyd was from Minneapolis, and it was the black Minneapolis community that sort of started this whole thing happening right now. And and so even back at this time, it was still people were like, oh, wow, there's black people in Minneapolis, you know.
Yeah.
Minnesota, so we're talking central north United States. A real beautiful state, lots of lakes. So I don't know, people just sort of forget that there's obviously a diverse community there, just like anywhere else. And some of the other bands that had come from there, not that many. I think Husker Du were from there. The Replacements, you know, just the people. Well, Bob Dylan was from there. So it just people got shocked that there was black people there. And you know who else is from Minneapolis? Lizzo.
Yeah, she's awesome, isn't she?
I didn't
know
she was from Minneapolis.
Yeah, and she acknowledges, you know, that Prince being there and that potential, you know, had a real impact on her. And also the sense of that your music has to be about positivity, you know, that she acknowledges Prince for that.
That's really interesting. I didn't know that.
Now, two of the guys who were in the time and did play their own music and wrote a lot of music, that Prince fired them. Was Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. So,
why did Prince fire
them? Firing them? Oh, they were like late to something. They were working one album and, you know, didn't show up, you know.
Right.
Apparently, you know, he was, you know, a
bit of a demon when it came to that, yeah.
Yeah. And so then they become one of the biggest production teams of all time. In fact,
amazing.
They've had literally, you know, like, more number one records than any other production team ever.
So we are listening to Janet Jackson.
I know, I'm so proud of you guys for playing Janet Jackson. I didn't think you would. So this is
I love Janet Jackson. Saw her over the fence at big gig she played, Friday Jams or something. I watched it from my friend's uncle's house.
That was only, was
fence.
That last year or the year before?
Yeah, it was pretty recent, and she was super cool.
So she had tried to have little couple solo things, and you know, they'd been just sort of nap, and she was younger. And so then she produced this album with, you know, Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, which was strange, you know, because she was from LA and sort of going to get these Minneapolis guys. And this album just took everything, and it was called Control, and it's about her getting more control of her life.
That's awesome.
Leaving her marriage, stop having her dad as her manager, and apparently it's been a model for like other sort of female solo artists to really try to write your own songs from your, you know, what's going on in your life, being honest, but also getting these hot producers.
That's so cool. Hey, we've had some Prince texts, and Kirsten, someone said Saw Prince live in Sydney. Ticket cost me 700 New Zealand dollars. Best money I ever spent. He blew my mind.
Oh, wow.
That's
insane. Amazing.
Yeah. That's...
And someone else has said, saw Prince at Wembley Arena in 1987 with Sheila E. on drums. They played Love Bizarre, best show of my life. And that sounds like a really, really incredible night.
Oh, that's amazing.
It also says, by the way, Michael Jackson was playing at the stadium the same night I made the right choice. Thank you, Philip. You did.
Oh. Well, there was always a rivalry between Michael Jackson and Prince in the 80s. Mm. So Janet, going to one of Prince's peoples, that was a big slap in the face of the family as well.
Right, okay.
And then her album, like, won Grammys over Michael, you know, yeah. And... you know, beat it out of the chart.
That's so interesting. This Control album?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, fun fact that I just have to add, Jimmy Jam's dad is named Cornbread Harris.
That's a great name. Janet Jackson is one of those performers where you watch her dance and you're like, how old are you? How are you doing that? This is unreal.
I remember lots of people saying that after Friday Jams.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and singing at the same time. And then, you know, think of Lizzo. You know, she really established this pattern.
Yeah.
But the production that they did on all, you know, her albums, this one and after that, is just amazing. And they ended up, they've produced for everyone now.
Yeah.
You know, from the Spice Girls, George Michael, Rod Stewart.
Wow.
Human League.
Wow. Actually,
yeah, they have more number ones than any other songwriting and production team in history.
It kind of makes sense, though. That list is not necessarily a list of artists I put together, but I'm thinking about how there could be a through line, and maybe it is that production sound, that kind of big 80s, early 90s, big drums.
Well, but they've also had... there are a handful of producers that have had number one records like in 3 decades, you know.
Wow.
Like they, but yeah, it's sort of like if you're a top artist and now what do? How do you get new sound? Well, let's go to these guys. They just have this magic touch and this sort of unique sound that, you know, they have legit connection to, you know, they're not sort of borrowing it.
Yeah, Janet. Well, that was fantastic. The Minneapolis sound. Janet Jackson, Climax, and Sheila E. were what we listened to this morning. What are you going to bring us next week, Kirsten?
Oh, man. Okay, Weeb.
Weeb, okay.
I have no idea Weeb. What that is. Literally
Weeb
not a clue.
Music. And Weeb can maybe be a slur, so I don't want to offend anyone, but apparently it's the right term.
Okay.
It's people that are into anime.
All right, we will find out. More about that next week. Thank you very much, Kirsten. I hope you have a lovely weekend.
I'm so glad you guys enjoyed it.
Oh, such a great bunch of tracks there.
That was Travelling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zimpke.
Thank you.